Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. My name is Scott McKenzie, and thank you very much for joining this platform. This platform, this podcast, celebrates you, the women and men of industry. You are bold. You are brave. You dare greatly. You're changing the world and you're changing lives. Why not? Why not celebrate you? Because you deserve it. I'm a big fan of yours, FYI. So if anybody says, I don't have any fans, they're lying. Because you have one right here, Scott McKenzie, Industrial Talk Podcast. Okay, we're going to be starting a new series. Now, this series is interesting, and we're going to kick it off, and we'll get some more information. And in the hot seat, her name is Jennifer Griemert, right? And she is the executive director at Energy Outreach Colorado. We're speaking about the heart and helping people. How can you complain against that? Come on. Let's get rocking. She's a firecracker. A lot of fun. Cool. As cool can be. That's who Jennifer is. But before we get going, I mentioned it briefly in the you know, quickly. Now, this is interesting. So there's a desire on this part and a number of really great people who have a desire to sort of make sense of all this. So there's sense making, right? Of all of this COVID stuff. What do we do? Now, on this particular podcast, you've heard me hammer on and on and on about the necessity to rebuild, or survive, rebuild, and prosper, right? What do we do? What are the strategies? How do we make sense of that? 2020 is behind us. 2021 is right ahead of us. And we need strategies. We need people to be able to provide insights on what we can do to survive, rebuild, and prosper. We have to. You have to. We have to make this happen because we're all about, and this is how it started, talking about collaboration, right? Collaborate. We just can't do it on ourselves. Collaborate, innovate, because we got to think differently. We've got to, I mean, we just have to. Not just from a technology perspective, but just more into the how do we relate? How do we communicate? How do we make people succeed? How do we solve problems? And then, of course, the big one for me, the huge one for me, the biggest one of the bunch is educate. And that's where sense-making comes into play. We have been through a challenging year, some more than others. Some are, you get the various degrees, but the reality is nobody's going to sit there and say, that was sort of a normal year. It wasn't, right? And so myself, Cap Logistics and others have come up with this program that we're trying to put meat on the bones as we speak. We're going to drive a flag in this, you know, in the ground, but it is a way of being able to create real masterminds that have real insights to solve real problems that you and others can truly execute, not just from a business, but all the way up into the government level and downward and extend out. How do we help people succeed? How do we help people survive, right? What are the strategies and tactics? And because I've been talking about collaboration, this is purely a collaborative effort. And Jennifer here is the first one out of the gate. So this is how it rolls. We'll do podcasts. We will definitely start talking about all of the details associated with what Jennifer does and others do. And then we start to collaborate and collect all that information. And then on January, put this on your calendar, January 28th, we're going to be talking about the community side of this effort, right? And how we can help the community from the perspective of people who are truly and companies who are truly in the trenches and helping people succeed. And then we're going to do that not just from that. We're going to do it from an academic point of view. We're going to do it from a business point of view. And we're going to do it from a government point of view. And we're going to create an incredible network. an incredible mastermind group that you can collaborate with, and everybody wins. And that's what we're trying to do. And we're using the platforms such as Industrial Talk podcasts, videos, all the media that we can possibly muster up to be able to get that message out and get you tactical solutions that make sense, because we're in the sense-making business. How's that? Oh, I'm worn out. One little intro and I'm worn out. All right, let's get on with the interview, because she's wonderful. She's with an organization called Energy Outreach. Now, this is what's interesting about it. They help people, and they with their energy bills and with their that are maybe challenged in some way, shape, or form. They're able to sort of help keep that light on, keep the energy going, keep the natural gas paid, and be able to help them from truly an overall health perspective survive. And this is in Colorado, but pretty much every state has a similar organization, and I love this stuff. I love when people put their thoughts into action. And her team at Energy Outreach Colorado puts it into action. And we need more people like Jennifer. You need to step up, and we need to just do our part. There's a lot of people that need help, and there are a lot of great organizations and a lot of great people like Jennifer that want to help and that can provide an excellent avenue to make that happen, right? Let's start talking about caring. Let's start talking about giving of your time and effort and not having or expecting anything in return, because you're heroes. You are industry heroes, and this platform is for you. So let's get on with the interview. Jennifer Greemert. Now, that's Greemert. The organization is Energy Outreach Colorado, and she's a fire plug. So enjoy the interview. Jennifer, welcome to the Industrial Talk podcast. I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to this conversation. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
All the way from Colorado. It's cold over there.
It is.
Have you got snow?
We do. Yeah. And it's supposed to snow tonight. So.
Is it really?
Yes. It's beautiful.
Oh, I love the snow. We don't get enough of that here. Well, we get none in Louisiana. maybe the part of the top of the boot, but not here in old New Orleans area. No. When it does, it's a national security issue. You know, it's one of those problems. So anyway, for the listeners out there, now we're going to have a great conversation, and I am just jacked about it. Give us a little background, who you are, and why you're such an incredible professional, and then we're going to venture on into the interview itself.
Sure. So I'm Jennifer Greemert. I'm the Executive Director of Energy Outreach Colorado. So we're a statewide nonprofit whose mission is to ensure that all Coloradans can afford home energy. And I've been fortunate to be with this organization for over 20 years. I've spent my entire career in the nonprofit sector focused on affordable energy, affordable housing, economic literacy, and even did a little stint with higher education and all. But I am a person who really enjoys fundraising. I enjoy repurposing funding to help those in need.
And, repurposing. I love it.
Yeah, I've made a career out of it.
So, but how does somebody like you, why did you get involved?
You know, I think I grew up in a family that was all about, you know, economic equality and sort of knowing that there's a lot of people that have more than me, but so many more people that have less. And so when I kind of discovered the nonprofit sector as a career opportunity, I kind of jumped on it. I have an economics and political science background, so I like that intersection of policy and, you know, money and math and distribution of resources. I discovered Energy Outreach Colorado in the mid-90s. I was the fourth employee hired, and this was when energy, you know, it's always been obviously a critical need and a basic need, but it was a little simpler than it is now, right? It was sort of the framework that we had of our energy sector was how it was designed 100 years ago. And in that transition, we've seen huge shifts in how energy is delivered and the importance of it in our lives. And so it's been really an exciting field to be in and to be able to help people access affordable, reliable energy has been a great joy in my life.
It's an interesting journey, to say the least, because I mean, when you start talking about the necessity to provide, it's the state of Colorado. It's not just, it's the state of,
correct. Right?
Okay. There's a community out there that needs help, that needs assistance, and power is pretty important. I mean, I put it right there at the top of necessities within family, people's lives. How have you seen it sort of change from when you started to where you are today, and where do you see it going?
Well, and I think, you know, we're in a post-COVID conversation, right? So people are home. They understand what heat and energy means to them. They understand the health of the home and how that relates. I think we're also seeing, you know, with climate change being a big conversation, you know, reduction in carbon. When we think about energy, we tend to think about maybe it's gasoline in our cars. We don't tend to think about the natural gas or electricity coming into our homes. And so from that consumer perspective, you know, I think about energy all the time. Most people spend a few minutes a year thinking about it. They just take for granted that they turn the light on, that the heat is going to be there.
They do. I'm one of them. And it's like, we had a storm come through, power was out. I'm going, what is going on here? What have they not done?
Exactly. And think of Louisiana and the impact that power had on people. Lives, right? And, you know, and I think this is something that we just have to, you know, balance of how energy comes to us, how we use it, you know, the value that it has in our lives. And then as we look at sort of this transformation of energy, right, that we want to produce energy in different ways, that we want to consume it in different ways, that we're starting to have technology that allows us to control that usage differently than it used to. And I think, you know, we are continuing to understand what a vital resource it is and what a highly nuanced conversation it is in terms of energy generation, how it comes into our homes, is something that's evolving really, really rapidly. Again, when you think of the proposition of how energy was delivered, it's been sort of traditionally done for over 100 years. And in the last, I would argue, you know, 10 to 15 years, it's completely transforming.
So it's being driven by a lot of innovation. I mean, right. There's a lot of innovation going on there. Now, but I'm gonna have to address the elephant in the room, and that's COVID, right?
Yeah.
You have a community, and that community is in need. What are your biggest challenges, especially today, and the uncertainty of the future? What's your biggest needs?
So pre-COVID, about 1 in 4 Colorado households qualified for our programs based on income. And what we're seeing post-COVID is just more households that are underemployed, that are unemployed, that are just really struggling with resources. And also that, again, need for having energy in their home or home more, you know, residential usage is up, right? So that affordability issue comes into play. You know, we've already seen sort of an income inequality in this country that then gets exacerbated when you have a situation like this. And so we work really closely with, you know, our government partners. There's public funding that goes into both energy assistance and energy efficiency. My organization fills in the gap where those public funds are available. And then working with utility companies to, you know, put people on payment arrangements, to start really talking about how do we ensure people stay connected. And then how can we think about, you know, that intersection of energy, housing, and health, really, in terms of like looking at energy efficiency programs and things that are going to make that home healthier while also reducing costs. So we're in a really interesting place right now. We've been developing programs over the last 15 years. We've got great partners across the state. But like you said, Colorado being, you know, kind of the microcosm I work in, we have an urban corridor that has one set of issues with lots of and regulated in vertically integrated utilities. We have Eastern Plains that are more kind of that Midwest high plains that have smaller communities, rural electric cooperatives and municipal utilities that work with. And then we have resort communities where we have high concentration of wealth, but the people that we work with or that we serve, you know, are traveling multiple counties to really be the essential workers in those communities. They have much higher rates and cost of living. So we have to balance all of those interests as we look at this work and not sort of have a one size fits all, but really integrate with what people need at the time. And we're fortunate that we have strong partners to do that.
Yeah. And do you see any, I mean, I know there's do you have a crystal ball type of thing? However, what are the challenges? I mean, really, with your market here with this COVID, because quite frankly, your services, your solutions are truly needed. We need to rebuild. We need to figure out solutions, and to help people, you know, survive and then rebuild and so on is vitally important. What do you see probably that biggest issue that you've got to deal with in your group?
Yeah, it's really meeting people where they are and what they need. So we do have a holistic approach to this. So most people come to us in a crisis. They can't afford their energy bill, or they don't have access to heat. And so we make sure that they, you know, get their furnace repaired or replaced, that we, you know, get them on a arrearage management program, you know, on a payment arrangement, that we help pay that utility bill for them in that short term. Then we really try to educate around, you know, conservation. What can they do to reduce the usage? What equipment can be replaced? And then we're looking at long-term energy solutions that we do through a lot of the regulatory and legislative work around affordable energy policy. So what is the rate design in the community? How do people interact with their utility partner? How do we think about not only just individuals, but small business owners who are also really struggling in this? You know, we're trying to balance, obviously, like, overall rates with how we can deliver these, you know, innovative and I think really, you know, good programs to people to help reduce that burden. Because, again, we need a healthy workforce. We need people, you know, participating as much as possible. We also need healthy utility companies. They're, you know, the cornerstones of a lot of our communities, and they're doing tremendous work, right? When you have a storm, you know, being able to be agile. But I think all of these in this transition, when you have any major transition like this, there's tensions. And so I think that's where more education just around energy in general, more conversation about it. It's not a black and white issue. There's a lot of nuances in this. I think the innovation is exciting. You know, we're starting to figure out how we can get community solar gardens and get those subscriptions so that we can provide long-term affordability for folks. And
I think you said solar gardens.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha.
It's about like a big solar array. So versus a rooftop system, which may not be, you know, I have a strong opinion about that just because there's so much limited funding that we have in this space.
Right.
You know, thinking about where the economy is of scale, either utility scale solar gardens or, you know, there's all different terms for them, solar farms. But I think, you know, as we look toward this transformation, again, there's ways solar is so much more affordable than it used to be. It's on par with any other source of energy. And so making sure that if the families we represent are paying into that system to subsidize it, that they get access. And so we have to just kind of keep being creative.
See, here's a challenge I have. And you, in this short conversation, you've rattled off a ton of stuff. Yeah, you could do this. You could do this. You could do this. You could do this, but let's sort of narrow it down to, let's say, three things that one can do. I mean, just right now. Sure, I can call you. I don't have time. Like, give me some quick hits here.
Well, I mean, in every community across this country, there are local organizations that are supporting income-vulnerable households. You know, large organizations like Catholic Charities and Salvation Army, those are groups that we work really closely with. But in every community, a lot of times there's a food bank or a rental assistance program that also has energy assistance on top of it. So our local community partners are really, really good at finding out who those families are in need. There's a lot of faith-based institutions doing this. The challenge is every state does this a little bit differently, right? There's federal programs that are supported. Some are run by community action agencies. Some are run by counties. You know, I think there's a LIHEAP clearinghouse that sort of has a national view of this. You know, looking at all the different utility programs, it's kind of all over the place because energy regulation and management is all over the place. But I can tell every state there's an organization similar to ours or doing the kind of work we do. And I think, you know, look at what your utility company does. Can you donate monthly bill? Can you, you know, help your neighbor?
Right. Right. And I do like that. Now, that's all great. Okay. So I got a number. And it starts with the number. See, this is a problem with power. If I don't have power, I'm having a hard time with the number. It's just like one. But anyway, let's say I can make that call and I can get that. So there's people out there and organizations, companies, whatever, are willing to help.
Yes.
You're still struggling.
I mean, I think we have to look at what's happening with COVID. There's part of our population that's thriving. They're working from home. Nothing's changed. Their expenses are down. We have more disposable income. And then we have a group of folks that are always going to be challenged because of the wages they have. They're maybe underemployed. They're working less hours, or they get sick and they don't have sick time. I mean, so there's this balance that we're seeing. And so how can one group help support the other group so that we gain sort of a help, right? That there's a shared benefit of supporting these kinds of emergency assistance programs. And I think what we find is most of the families, I would say over 75% of the families we serve, just need our help once or twice. It's that one time sort of immediate, something happened. Right now it's a lot of health challenges and job interruptions, but it could be a divorce. It could be something that just happens. All of a sudden you don't have, you know, the income to make ends meet. You need a little bit of help. That's why we design these programs. You know, for the other 25%, you're an older adult, maybe you're someone that's disabled, that's on fixed income, and so your income doesn't change. So as other expenses, like you said, energy is top of the stack. It's the bill that you pay first. But it's also interesting because you pay for it after you consume it, right? So there's like a difference for that. And I think when we think about utilities in general, how broadband's become so critical, how water has become so critical. And all these things are layering on top of each other. And so I think, you know, again, more awareness that we can have around just the affordability issues is just going to benefit everyone.
So, okay, that's all great. It's all, it's good. You're doing yeoman's work. It's fantastic. I love it. But there's got to be roadblocks. There's got to be challenges. This doesn't just, you know, wake up and go, hey, check it out. Another check is in the mail. Check it out. I mean, you know, what are the roadblocks?
I think, you know, funding is always a problem. I mean, I think that's, you know, regardless of what, you know, challenge you're trying to overcome, right? And so what we try to do is use the best of the resources that we have. Our funding comes from the taxpayers, utility rate payers, or donations. And so we take that very seriously and try to be as efficient as we can. I think there's, you know, just a constant struggle around what's the best investment and how do you, you know, make that. I think the barriers that we have for the families we serve is it's a lot of paperwork. It's a very humbling experience to have to ask for help in our, you know, sort of public assistance world. It's a lot of, you know, repeating yourself over and over, telling your story. It's very humbling. It's hard to do. And I think what we're trying to figure out is how do we better create systems and structures that can allow this assistance to flow in an easier way. And I think that's just something that we're always going to struggle with in this human services world.
And you're dealing with dignity. I mean, some people are probably having a hard time. And do you ever have to say, I'm sorry, we just talked about funding, we can't help you. Do you say that? Or do you just say, yeah, we'll figure it out. We will figure it out.
We really try to figure it out. Yeah. I mean, I think part of the challenge of we balance public funding and private funding is the public funding has a lot of caveats to it. You know, people have to do their due diligence, you know, in terms of distributing this funding because that's the appropriate thing to do. So where we try to bring in flexible funding is to help ease that in situations. So I'll give you an example of, let's say we have someone that has a really old furnace and it dies and they've been band-aiding it forever and ever. And we want to put in a high efficiency gas furnace. We have really affordable natural gas rates. We think that's going to save them a lot of money. It's going to be better, but their electrical panel won't, you know, needs to be updated or they don't have the right ventilation. So those are the things that in the past, a public program might have to say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't do this because we don't have the funding to bridge that difference. And that's where we've really said, you know, we have so few opportunities to get into these homes. Let's help when we can. So how can we provide that flexible support And we're really starting to see utilities understand that health and safety aspect. Mm. You know, one other example is think of a child that has a chronic respiratory issue and they're constantly going back and forth to the hospital. And we release them into a home that has, you know, really poor indoor air quality, maybe really old carpeting that's holding on to a lot of dust and, you know, hair and things that are just exacerbating the respiratory problem. What if we went in and made that home healthier, reduced that, you know, kind of impact on that household? Can we then track reduced health costs and improved, you know, quality of life and less miss school and less miss work? I mean, I think we have to really start making these connections more broadly. And I think that's just the nature of when you start to really experience this individually. You know, in Colorado, we had wildfires all summer where people really would open their windows at night to let fresh air in and they couldn't. You know, that all of a sudden changes the equation for people about what is, you know, health and home need and energy.
Yeah.
It's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You're absolutely spot on. And yet, yeah, there are so many little variables that you have to deal with. Are you always just sort of sitting there one day as like, man, I've been doing this for 20 years. I didn't think about that one.
Yes, it's constant. And you know, I think I sit at like the 30,000 foot level, right? I think big, I want big solutions, big, you know, and then my staff will come to me and they're like, I'm in a building and I can't fit the new furnace in the elevator to get to the boiler room.
I'm sorry for laughing, you know, but that's funny. It's true.
No, I mean, we had a house where there was a tree growing through the house. And then you're like, okay, well, what pot of money do I use to fix that? You know, working in rural communities that don't have the same interconnection, you know, we've done work on, and I was just telling somebody this, like in Southern Colorado, we still have a lot of families that use wood as their primary heating source. And so there's like an indoor air quality component to that.
Wow.
That's challenging, right? But there's
also
style aspect of it. And so we don't want to just replace it without thinking about customer choice and what do people, you know, it's always a balance. And I think we always try to think of it from the customer perspective and that family and how can we help them meet the needs that they have without, you know, changing the way they live.
And it's so funny because when we start talking about energy, I naturally gravitate toward power, right? But it's also natural gas. It's all components.
Propane.
See, I just naturally, it's like, yeah, I got the power. It comes in through that line. But no, it's much, much grander than that. Now, once again, if pre-COVID was 1 in 4, do you have any ideas of what it's going to be in, well, whatever you call this next normal-ish post, whatever?
You know, I don't. I mean, I think we're just trying to stay nimble. What we do know is our need is up about 40%, you know, from where it was last year at the same time.
Oh.
Our agency partners are just seeing, you know, so much more need in terms of food assistance and rental assistance. And so, again, that flexible money. You know, I think there's been a lot of great efforts, you know, at the federal level and certainly at the state of Colorado. We just were awarded $5 million through a special session that the governor kind of initiated with our legislature. And the legislature has been, you know, terribly supportive. But I think these are just drops in the bucket that are trying to get us through. And so there's, again, how we don't know exactly how long it will go. We know there's a lot of people struggling. I think we're trying to make sure that people that are kind of new to this situation that may not have helped in the past.
I would imagine like this, like I would never know. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't even, I was like, dang, I can't pay my bills. Then I wouldn't know where to go from there. It's like it just dies.
And what I want people to know is like there's a lot of us working really hard to generate resources so we can help you in that time.
Yeah.
But I also think people need to reach out to their utility companies because those companies have programs in place. They're doing payment arrangements. They, you know, have a lot of knowledge of folks that are really, they want to keep you as customers. It's in their best interest. And so we have to kind of work together to get through this temporary period. And I think that's, again, for small businesses as well as individuals.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap this up. Now, let me ask you this. If I were, let's say I've got a lot of cash in my pocket and I want to give it to somebody and I want to give it to you, where do I go?
You go to www.energyoutreach.org. And our website has all of our programs. It has connections to all nice. Our partners. People can figure out where to access help. You know, for you as an individual, we also have programs that help like multifamily affordable housing or nonprofits improve their efficiency. Then you can connect to national partners that we have that do this work all across the country. But energyoutreach.org.
Sure, check that out, man. I have nothing to add to that. I can't even poke holes in that strategy. I mean, it's easy. Go to energyoutreach.org. Easy.
Yep.
And you can get pretty much all the information. I guarantee you, worst case scenario, I would imagine there's a phone number and say, hey, I got a question. I mean, what else can you ask for?
And we have lots of places to put that funding, and we can report on it any way you want.
Clearly you do, because you keep on saying, we do this and we do this, we can do this, we can do. I mean, it's amazing. Kudos to you and your team. Absolutely wonderful. And I think that you're going to be needed more than ever by 40%. Like there's a need, 40% increase. Yeah, you're awesome. I love you. That's good stuff. I love what you guys
Thanks.
Do. You're awesome. All
well,
right, you listeners out
the
there.
Opportunity.
Yeah. No. It's all on this side. Listeners out there, I want you to get involved. So we're going to wrap it up on the other side. Do not go away, because we will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right. Once again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. How about that, having a heart? Jennifer Greemert, G-R-E-M-M-E-R-T is the name. The organization is Energy Outreach Colorado. Go out to energyoutreach.org. Get some information. You're not going to be disappointed. And people need your help. And I know that you guys are absolutely generous and kind, big-hearted, just like Jennifer. All right. Again, January 28th is going to be the date that we're going to be sort of driving that flag in for this particular sort of mastermind group on how we will survive, rebuild, and prosper. But with people who have a real vested interest in helping you and your company succeed, right? And they have insights, and we have to collaborate. We have to be innovative. We have to educate. And that's the real premise. We have to make sense of all this so that we understand what to do, where to go, and how we can definitely survive, because we need you. It's that important. And these individuals, like Jennifer and others, are just willing to give of their time, their energy, their insights, their heart to be able to help us in these very challenging times. All right. Everything that you can possibly imagine will be out at industrialtalk.com. This particular podcast will have all those links. And then we're going to continue to sort of pump on it. This was the first one out of the gate. Jennifer was kind enough to be able to say, yes, I will do it. I see the vision. I understand it, and I want to be a part of it. Thank you, Jennifer. All right. Again, be bold, be brave, dare greatly, and hang out with people who are bold, brave, and daring greatly, and you're going to change the world, and that's what you're all about, because you're in industry, and you do that. All right. Thank you very much, and we're going to be back with another incredible podcast interview shortly. Be safe.